Hello everyone, my name is Mike Berndt from AI Campus. A very warm welcome to all of you, and don't be surprised why you are listening to me in English today, because we are in the fourth season of our podcast, and this is the season of Dr. Med KI, Med AI International. So this is why we are talking in English today, even with my guest. I basically could also talk in German because he's from Vienna, from Austria. A very warm welcome as well to Ilya Rathgruber, and I will leave the floor to you and you could introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Mike. Very excited to be here. And why I'm here is because I'm from a first profession. I'm a medical doctor from my background. But along the journey, I discovered many interesting paths, and that's why I really early bet on the topic of AI. I'm a medical doctor who turned an AI developer, a journey which started 2013, 11 years ago, even in medical school. Many people ask me, why do I not practice as a doctor anymore? Why do I work with AI and develop solutions? Short answer I can give now, the long answer I can give throughout the podcast, but the short answer is, when I was in medical school, I discovered how much I have to learn. It was overwhelming, and I realized even if you go afterwards, after finishing university, into the practice, the learning doesn't stop. As exciting as it sounds, when I read a paper in 2015 that for an average profession like a subject of internal medicine, just to keep ahead with everything what was released in scientific literature every week, have to spend 110 hours of reading time. And this was for me like, oh, this is overwhelming. How to cope with that? And even some doctors find strategies. For me, it was more like a motivation to find an innovative approach. And that's why I discovered really early the topic of AI. And this is why the short answer why I work in the AI field and not in the clinic anymore.
Yes, super interesting. And this is, of course, why we are having you today here in our podcast, because you have expertise from basically two perspectives, as you described. You are as a doctor as well as an AI professional, having both perspectives. And I think, like you already mentioned, a quite interesting topic when you are talking about AI in medical education. This is something we are talking about later on. But I would like to start with you with a very general question. Mm-hmm. We are hearing there's so much about generative AI hype. Everybody is talking about AI, and we've got the feeling everybody is using AI. But where do you see, like, really fields in medicine where AI tools can support a doctor nowadays?
If I look in the application of AI, it depends on which medical subject, you're talking about. There are subjects which are really specialties, which are really experienced and apply it very often. For example, to name a few, radiology, pathology, and also radiation therapy. If you told them already 4 years ago, there's AI for this and this, and they say, yeah, I know, and we love to use it, love to apply it. But usually, when you talk about this AI, that's not very often generative AI. It's more classic deep learning, machine learning, convolutional neural networks, and what I think was compared to generative AI, which is underrepresented in the current AI space in healthcare, is graph neural networks. We can talk about later a little bit, maybe. And if we talk about this was the technology. This was what I summarized now, is like what technology of AI is applied. And what does also have to be mentioned is, what does mean AI in healthcare? How to structure it? And even how difficult it is to answer the question, what is the definition of AI? There are many different approaches I can describe it. Maybe the most go forward one is the one of the Dartmouth conference from 1956, I think, from John McCarthy, which were first AI term defined. I like to structure the term AI in healthcare into four areas. There are also recent papers about it. The one and the most obvious one is AI in clinical decision making, how to decide if you are in the practice, the first one. The second one, which is more on the management part in hospitals, is the AI in operations and management. It's area number two. And area number three, which I briefly talked about now, is medical imaging and diagnostics. This is something we see since several years, AI applications. And the fourth one, if you talk about devices, etc., it's the AI in patient care and monitoring. This is like the four areas where AI is applied, and decision-making or even more the diagnostics is something as I thought is more known. And if you talk about generative AI, this is something, if you look at these four areas, this is, I think the most promising is one in the operations and management, and also in imaging diagnostics or what is related to it, the administrative work more or less, like we can talk about later the patient discharge letters.
But I think this is a super interesting thing to summarize so far, that generative AI with the hype starting in 2022, it doesn't feel like it when you really like are on the part of application in medicine and healthcare. There are basically different models, different systems are being used already like for several years quite successfully. Is this right, as I put it?
Yes and no, I can say, because successfully depends on the application. And the application area diagnostic is, yes, it is known. But if you go out to the people who are using it, I mean, healthcare staff, doctors and nurses, then they have a preference for specific products. The reason why some of them popular are not popular is because the development time, it takes a lot of effort and also years. And in general, for example, in radiology and diagnostics, in the average, it takes 8 years from the start to get an application really running that is CE certified, MDR. Now then AI Act also coming up, which is not yet relevant, but in the forthcoming future. So it is applied, but not all products are equally preferred. And some wouldn't say, oh yes, we have AI, but no, that's not answering our needs really, how should I say, sufficient. The reason may be because maybe you bet on an early stage product, which is important. But if you work with a more mature one, then of course the quality is different because you need time for development for such a new technology.
It's another huge field, like all the regulation processing and the process of certification. But let's start just first with a closer look. You already like kind of described the different fields. Let's have a closer look on diagnostic or clinical decision making. How can AI support a doctor during diagnosis or like treatment process, for example?
As usual, it depends on the specialty, but let me take, for example, radiology and also specific use case like X-rays or CT scans. And usually it's like how we use ChatGPT. We use ChatGPT not for the really difficult questions on our life, but for some general ones. And to give like an overview, 2016-17, there were already diagnostic solutions and they were really applied. And they equaled about the bottom 10% of all medical doctors in this field. So that's like, yeah, it's okay, but it's not that far developed. And it developed even better when they understood, let's not focus on diagnosing diseases or all modalities in neurology. Let's start with X-rays and CT scans. Let's like the basic one, like the X-ray of the chest, which is performed at every hospital multiple times and takes a lot of time for the neurologist to write the letter, what the findings are. This is like a routine task, but this is important because still you can find relevant diseases or clinical findings which can be overlooked. That's why the doctor has to do it. And usually it's not a very preferred task. It's like I have to do 50 every day per doctor. And it's like, this is like not real administrative work, but it is a kind of, because it's really repetitive. And that's, this is where AI can help to like filter which findings or which pictures, which patients, which chest x-rays are the normal ones, which are really basic, and like reduce, for example, 80% of the images are done. You get a pre-filled diagnosis and a letter to check. And then you have spent the last 20% of the time the doctor spends his time to focus specifically on the more complicated ones, which means should give more freedom and joy to work at the really interesting stuff.
So really, like, basically that AI can do like the tiring and more boring work, and like the doctors, or in your example, the radiologists, they can really focus on like interesting diseases or something, which is more engaging. And how do you see, I mean, you now described like an application scenario. Is AI like in this context already in general, kind of general use at university clinics in Austria and Germany, or are we at a starting point when it comes to this?
Actually, especially in our German-speaking Austria and Germany, we are really at a starting point. It's like more getting aware what it is, and then finding application areas for other specialties who do not use AI, but still the ones who like radiology who use AI, still there's a lot of room for improvement. How can it the subject be further developed with AI application? So the short answer is no, it's not widely used. Of course, the generative AI hype brought a lot of interest, and many management staff of hospitals is more interested. And they do workshops, they do think more outside of the box, and don't only want to buy from the medtech providers. They already buy the solutions, and they want to think for themselves, like to find application areas, not that the provider comes to them and says, hey, this is a solution. Now they're thinking starts to change, that we are in charge. What do we want to see from AI? Because it's like in every subject, in every industry, in every area. If you see interesting toy and see, oh, that's an interesting toy, that's an interesting solution, I want to apply it, that's not the right way to think. The first way is always, what is the area? What's the problem? Of course, there are general holistic problems in every hospital and every country, for the healthcare industry, every country and hospital. And the healthcare processes are very different. But people are staying in the hospitals, and the management are starting to understand that they have to ask questions themselves. What do they need from AI? And only then finding the right solution, and only then ask the question, make or buy? Can we make it ourselves, or can we buy it?
We from AI Campus have always quite the feeling, not only in the field of medicine, that people are coming to us, people writing us, like in the forum or via support, that they are kind of afraid that they are being substituted by AI. Yeah? And I interestingly hear this quite often from radiologists. Yeah, do you think that people don't want to get in touch with AI because they are afraid they could be substituted in a few years by the technology? Or does it have really like other reasons? Because you are saying like there are lots of systems and applications which are already on the market for quite a while.
I think there are two relevant categories what I can answer on that. The first one is, the more you work with the technology, the more you're aware what are the capabilities, what it can really help me as a doctor, the more the fear starts to drop. So like the less you know about it, because, oh, it's like an unknown black box and could really take my job away if I just look at ChatGPT, etc. But the more I start to understand technology behind the application, the more I'm aware, okay, that's how it works. And then you start to understand what are the shortcomings, what is not working the way it should. And I think it also depends on if you're talking about, for example, radiology, 8 or 9 years ago, when at these big conferences, when there were surveys, and when the surveys, it was asked, when will be the radiologist will be replaced by AI? And then the answers were really often very, I should say, in the more like pessimistic way, like they feared to be replaced. But now, several years later, like many of them, especially the ones who go to the congresses and are in touch with the vendors and the startups and see what is possible, the more I see that the fear is dropping, because they see how it can enhance the work. And to answer also on a, like more like on a strategic level, usually you can put every AI solution into 4 categories, and it depends, is it easy for AI to do the task, and is it easier or hard for the human to do the task? And especially the ones where you need the human relationship, human connection, something you need to communicate with the human, is usually something which is more easy for the human and difficult for the AI.
Just one thing to summarize what you are basically saying is that the more people know about AI, the less fear they have about applying it, and then they are basically seeing the real potential where it can act as a support system, right? I think this is something we are talking about later on as well when we're talking about education, the educational aspect. But this is, you could say, something like a general approach, really, like get to know more about it and then you see the potential, right?
Absolutely. And also get to know more means also there are three layers of what means to get to know it. As a general user, it means like I just know how to apply it and not just how to use it. This is something, this is like the first level. The second level is when you are like an AI medicine facilitator, when you work with the medtech companies or with any projects which are working on the topic AI in healthcare, then you're starting not only to apply it, you start to think what is the application area, which problems need to be solved, and then you have a much more deeper involvement into it, and you don't also start to understand that it's not like a magic machine, you just drop a coin and then you get an answer. You're starting to understand the algorithm behind it, so you're more interested to don't see the black box but also to understand the processes behind it. And then the third layer is the people who are developing it, or like still related to healthcare, but develop the AI applications. That's why we also we both together talk about open source, because in open source you understand the technology. There's not like a black box. Of course, you're maybe not an expert how to train a foundation model from the scratch, but still you can understand how the technology works. And this is the third layer. These people, they are totally not afraid of AI.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because you say like the deeper you look inside the systems and the technology, yeah. So of course, the more know how to use it and the less fear you have. But the thing you already also mentioned is that medical doctors, they have so much to do in reading so many papers every day and being at their heights of time. So I think this could lead to a tension field if they have to do like both, yeah, being like kind of technicians and like doctors. You approach this, but let's put this later on and let's get back to the point what you already said, like where there's a high potential where AI can support. It's when we are talking about documentations. Yeah, me as a patient, for example, I only see the doctor when I'm at an appointment, like interacting basically with me, with people, like sitting in the waiting room. But as you said, like a great part of the day is blocked, like really with desk work, with documentation. Could you describe a bit further in detail how can AI take over tasks in this field and maybe give a doctor more time really to take care of the interaction with people, with patients?
Of course. I'm primarily thinking of two areas which I think have in the short-term future a big impact and are already used in the US and in the Nordic countries, is like the summary of the discharge letters. I saw statistics, for example, in Germany, Austria, you in average, a doctor spends 2 hours writing discharge letters. What is a discharge letter? It's more or less the summary when the patient was in the hospital, what was the diagnosis, which treatments were made, and what happened to him or her. And sometimes doctors have to write a discharge letter for patients they didn't even treat because their colleague is not in office at the moment, and they have to write it. And then they have to see through all the documentation, which procedures were made, which surgery was performed, how would the patient feel every day. And all these details, you have to keep in mind to write a really good discharge letter and also then keep give a recommendation. This is something, if you are somebody with AR background, if somebody hears that, you say, oh, there are different sources. They are all related to one, these patients. And then you have to write something. Then the term generative comes into your mind. And this is totally something where I see high potential to write these discharge letters. This is a task area which is relevant for every specialty in for every doctor, because every specialty has its own pros and cons and difficulties they have to manage. But this is something which all doctors have in common. This is why if a problem is very common, then it's likely that the solution is found, and then you can reduce the time. Depends on how the good solution works, from 2 hours per day on average to 15 to 30 hours per day, because you only need to review it and then edit it. And this would reduce a huge amount of time. And this is something which I think would make the work also more interesting, because of course it's not only for the discharge letter writing. You could also use this to why you are visiting the patient. If you don't have to need so much time before you come to into his patient room, we could get a brief summary of what was happening yesterday.
I have to jump in there because there, I said it in the beginning, in the introduction, this whole field of shadow AI, this is something where basically AI is being used or kind of being tested where it shouldn't. Because like, for example, like, I don't know, sensitive data could be shared with an institution, with a company where we don't know what the further use is. Yeah. And this is something we hear at AI campus as well, when we are collaborating with university clinics, that doctors are doing this because, as you said, like, there is a high documentation pressure and they are looking for kind of help that they can get this kind of work done. And so they are doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think like it's really important to say that they shouldn't do it like writing this kind of discharge letters with ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude. Should they? Yeah.
This is, of course, because if you just paste, and this is really happening, yeah, and I know from my colleagues, because there is no rules how to use such systems. They are opening on one screen all the information about the patient, and on the second screen they open ChatGPT and then start maybe not pasting the name, but they start to input the data. And then of course it's a proprietary system, OpenAI ChatGPT, which means the data is transferred to California, and then it is used for secondary use, which you're not aware of, that you are training a system or giving data for free. This is critical. It would be not so difficult to implement such a system with an open source large language model, because you could host it on a server, you could monitor how that is used, and the data stays within the hospital group. But many are, if you're talking about, but okay, then let's find a company or like implement it. Then the regulation process starts. Then they start to think, oh, and what do they use it for? I make research, and then this means I do the research, and then I change how I diagnose and treat the patients. And when this is happening, then you're in the medical device regulation, then you are maybe have the GDPR compliance, maybe is okay, is checked, because that is not so in California, but you have to find and define the use cases when it is used. And then people start to fear, and this is like a huge innovation stopper. So this is maybe like a reason why we don't see tools like open source LLMs for small research in hospitals. But at the same time, not only ChatGPT, I don't do main dropping, but for example, speech to text is a big topic in hospitals. And there are big providers who use AI to transcribe speech to text. And of course, the data is somehow then also sent to a company which is outside of the European Union. But because these companies are so big and speech to text is such a pressing problem, this is something I experience in Austria and in Germany on a bigger scale in hospitals, that they say, yeah, this data is a problem, but the speech to text problem, this is really pressing. We need to implement it. Yeah.
But you don't see now lots of tools like on the rise or being in the process of regulation. At this stage, I have to say that we are also collaborating at one or the other point with the Fraunhofer Institutes in Germany. And they are, for example, in the process at the moment of developing like a discharge letter tool. There are testings going on at the moment. And I would say I'm quite positive that within maybe the next year, this tool could possibly be launched, but they aren't a lot at the moment, are they?
Absolutely. This is still in the early stage. If you look at the innovation development or hype cycle or whatever you want to take, the adoption cycle is maybe the better word. It's not really far adopted. There are not many applications. There are some of it in Germany and in Austria. There are also like websites like KI Lernende Systeme, which is which summarizes all the AIs in all industries, healthcare included, and you can look at the companies who provide AI solutions. But if you start to take a deeper look what they really provide, it's as astonishing and laudable it is. Only a very small percentage of them is in the implementation stage, which means you can buy on stack such a solution and use in your hospital or implement it. And this is something, there are many reasons why it is not that widely used. Regulation is a topic, capital is a topic, but also talking about the Fraunhofer Institute, I also read some really interesting news about them. They are also working on the medical coding topic. This is something that's really relevant because medical coding, just to give a brief overview, if you write something like a discharge letter, you want to define the diagnosis, you still work with the old ICD-10 system. And this is not that many terms or codes. And the better solution would be Snowman CT. And Snowman CT is a big database and internationally recognized. And this has, depending on how you count it, of the concept and relationships, between 300,000 terms to 2 million terms. And just to give a comparison, which means the doctor who is writing the letter or doing a diagnosis, you have to remember or somehow to look correct to find the right code, what they want out of this 2 million or 300,000. And this is something I read that the Fraunhofer Institute is also developing something with AI to automate this process. And this is also a very promising area, which I think will be also in the German-speaking area will be very popular. And many companies are already going on the topic.
Yeah, you basically wanted to describe another application scenario regarding documentation, but I want to stick with this for another question, because like I think it's really interesting, because there's a huge discussion at the moment also around the AI Act. Yeah, is it really like kind of suffocating innovation, like also in the field of medicine, because like all the regulation processes are simply too long, or only like huge companies, huge US companies have the endurance, basically, and the money, to go through this process. And I want to ask this question because, as you said, like there's obviously a high need for doctors, for practitioners, for these kind of applications, because it really can support them like doing other things, and reduce like all this boring desk work. So do you think like things like the AI Act, like in the long regulation processing, are like a key factor for not seeing like lots of companies like working on these kind of products?
So yeah, you're more pointing on the topic that because of this long regulation processes and a huge area of this field, that many fear to start implementing AI or developing AI. This is more like the essence of the question, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, it's really like there are so many doctors and all like kind of are really bored by the desk work, by writing the discharge letters. Yeah. And the question really is when there is this high demand. So I would guess like there might, would be like lots of companies realizing this, but why, like also like in Austria and Germany, why are they all are not developing these kind of tools? Because there's obviously the market there. And like people or like professionals, which basically could, they are having the money to pay for it.
I have three ideas or three reasons that I think about. Usually in every industry, like if you develop anything, a product or a company, a build up a company, 1% is idea and 99% is execution. And in healthcare, you have 0.1% is idea and 99.9% is execution. You might have the best idea. There are brilliant ideas, but if you start and go in field and you realize so many more problems, that is also one of the reasons why the big tech from the US, it doesn't matter, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, they all started big healthcare ideas and mostly all of them were shut down because if you go into the execution stage, even if you have this large resources, you will struggle with a lot of several problems you could not foresee. So that's why execution is a big topic. Another one, if you say they have the money, but it's the question how much money, because I also see from other industries in Germany, if the company is interesting and they start to developing a prototype MVP, and the pocket is not, they're not willing to pay that much for it, and this is like for the, because they want to be sure, I want to receive exactly this product which has never been developed, it's innovation, but I want this with this and this features. They have the hospitals and the institutions, they have precise ideas and they know what they need, but the willingness to invest in it is what I see not that far. That needs to be also to give a comparison, maybe a very short topic about open source, because in Europe, most of the open source companies, they struggle to get investments. I mean, Aleb Alpha, the big company in Germany, they couldn't find the resources, capital, I mean, which they need. Also Mistral in France, they got a lot of capital, but still it was not enough. That's why they cooperated with Microsoft and went into Azure Cloud. And why talking about this, not about capital? For example, we have one smart place. It's not open in healthcare, but it's general AI in Europe. We have the long short-term memories from Sepp Hochreiter, which is in my country, in Linz, which is a really renowned person. Also Jan de Kuhn from Meta, and many, many people say this is something, this could be a solution to the, which could come from Europe. But still, even this person with his famous publications, with his network, he would need only 50 million to train the long short-term memories. That's what's for my last news that I read, and still he can't find the 50 million. We were talking about a small amount for this big innovation, and if you're talking about small use cases like discharge letters, you still have to invest a lot, because you need to somehow interact with the hospital information system, with the EHR, the chronic health record, and if you can't just give a tool and dear doctor, this is my tool and please use it. Their doctors are not so willing to switch between screens. They want to stay in one area. And this is also a big problem, because every tool you develop, you have to implement it in the hospital information system.
That's a very interesting point, because I mean, I think it's really interesting to stick with this for a second, because this would be also my question, because like I see there is the demand, and like all the doctors we are collaborating with, they are all saying like writing discharge letters, this would be such a help if we would have a support system like this. But nevertheless, I wouldn't do it, because like I know it would be maybe for Copilot would be so easy, maybe, like, to train the model. It's already, like, integrated in Word. Yeah, they have the money, they have the resources, they can easily do it. So my further question would be, how can monopolism being prevented, that it will be like the kind of the only tool like all doctors are using? Because as you said, people don't like switch tabs or like open up new windows or something like that. It would even have the advantage that it's already like in Word and I just need to activate it.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I can point out some topics on it, but as many other people, I don't have a solution on it because it's a really difficult question.
So how could you empower me? Sorry, Ilya, how could you empower me to start with a startup and maybe like compete with Copilot?
Actually, because the open source development has grown so much since 2 years, and we're only talking about now large language models mostly, but there are also other application areas, not only large language models, for example computer vision. And this is, I myself would, if you're not a hospital, or even if you're a hospital, I would find the resources on your server to implement such an AI solution and to interact with your system. It is possible. It takes time. You need an organization. You need somebody like you are aware of many AI topics. You know how to think. You know what is the capability. If you have such a counterpart you can talk to, then it's easy to find use cases which are really can be applied. And important is also that you invest the time, because even if you have a provider or company who knows his stuff and knows how AI works, still AI is research. It's not 100% everything you will get what you expect, but you need an organization. So there's also a key recommendation. It doesn't depend if hospital or a small dental office. You need a person who is like a chief AI officer or AI enthusiast, evangelist, name it how you want, but you need somebody who understands the basic processes and can be the counterpart to implement something AI-based. And it is easy to find a good use case. It is easy if you have a minimum amount of capital and resources to develop such a solution. But it is also important to set expectation broad, because yes, AI is very capable, and yes, it will grow even far more. I'm really impressed how far. I was always saying back in 2018, AI will become bigger than you expect, and it is really since 2022 it grows bigger than I said. Just towards a comparison, I developed my first AI chatbot 2020, so in the Corona year when I was finishing my second university degree, my master business administration. There is a lot of capability, but there are also problems. And if you work with large language models, you see there are hallucinations. And this is something, if you work especially in healthcare, then you can't rely on, yeah, this word, for example, is similar to this one. There's a kind of 80% similarity. That's not good enough. A doctor won't rely on it if you have a similarity. Yeah.
Okay, maybe like to wrap this up and go to the next use case regarding documentation, because you basically wanted to say or describe something else. If I would be like a doctor, what would you tell me, like, if I would say I would like to use a Copilot discharge letter tool? Yeah, what would you say why I shouldn't do it, and maybe instead using like a Fraunhofer tool, for example?
I don't know that exactly how a Fraunhofer tool is works, unfortunately, but I would love to know. But if you talk about the technology, the most quick answer would be because the reliance or how the information is generated, it's not accurate, especially in healthcare. That's not, as I said, it's not good enough. Why? This is also a topic what could be answered is the graph neural networks. I don't want to go too deep, but just to give on the comparison, these networks, they work like a network. They don't make a comparison. This is similar to this one with this amount of percentage, like Copilot or ChatGPT works. It has like a real database behind. And Copilot doesn't have, it has your files, but it does not build a database out of it. And that's why you give, get like not this quality of answer that you expect. And it's like a key term would be like knowledge graphs to combine this one with LLMs. This would mean if a LLM does not know the answer because it has not in the database, then you get like something like, I don't know, as an answer from the AI, from the LLM. And this would be my key recommendation why these tools may be not appropriate for the doctor, because the doctor wants to rely on it, because at the end of the day, he is still accountable for his decision, even if how good or bad AI is. But still, it needs more reliance, more to understand. And I think that graph neural networks, knowledge graphs, this is something which will be the future, this is something we can use here in Europe without runs on the big tech and other countries.
In der nächsten Folge.
The more or the deeper you are getting into AI, the less fear you have of applying it. Now you also have to learn things about AI as well.
It's even true for our general school, not only for medical school, that you start to apply AI during your study.